I'd like to present it without too much of a break, if it's okay for you, just to run it through. We've been talking about what was esoterically wisdom 2,000 years ago. And this wisdom was never written down until the close of the first century of the Common Era, the first century AD. The reason for it not being written down is explained in one of Plato's dialogues, the Phaedrus, where Socrates tells us the story about how writing was developed by an Egyptian sage named Thoth many thousands of years before the time of Plato. And Thoth brought the gift of letters and writing to the pharaoh. And he said, this is the greatest of all treasures because it will allow us to write down wisdom and preserve it. And the pharaoh criticized Thoth and said, this is the worst calamity to befall man, for people will now write down wisdom and think that it is safe on the page. And they will no longer develop themselves to the point to where they have the vitality to listen to the living tradition of wisdom from a teacher who will have had to have the vitality to live the kind of life necessary to have it rise up and become full in their own life. And then when people read off the page, in a way, the page becomes a dead medium. And of course, in our time, we've heard the phrase, print is dead. To overcome this particular objection that wisdom must be delivered with vitality, it must be spoken by someone who lives it, and it must be heard by someone who is energized to receive it. And that this double condition of shared presence is the only effective, real way in which wisdom is given a transmission. The Hermetic writings, which were written down starting around 90 AD, were written in a very peculiar time when it was recognized that the best wisdom teaching had already been delivered in person, and that those individuals who had heard it from the best of the wisdom teachers were dying out. And the last people, the old elders, towards the close of the first century AD, are the ones who wrote the first Hermetic treatises. We call them treatises. They're actually dialogues. But in previous weeks, we've talked about how these are energized dialogues. And because they're not like a play, where two voices are just from characterizations talking to each other from the words of a playwright behind the scenes, that would be a dialogue. And philosophically, dialogues are important, like Plato's dialogues. But the Hermetic discourses are a whole energy level above. They're higher. They're transcendental. Philosophy presupposes that we do not know, and therefore we talk with each other to find out. And we put a method on the talking, so with a method of inquiry, our talking is somewhat disciplined, and it makes it easier for us to disclose that we really didn't know the fine details of what we thought we did, and to disclose to ourselves the actuality which the inquiry develops and reveals for us. But the Hermetic discourses are not philosophy. They are wisdom teachings. They assume that we do know. And so the conversation that happens within a wisdom dialogue is to disclose to the hearer of the dialogue something which you already know but have forgotten. Why, how could you forget something so important as who you really are? How could you forget why you are here? Why we are here? Why are we together at this particular juncture on this evening? Why do we know each other not only for a few minutes and not only for thousands of years, but eternally? We know each other. We belong together. Why is it that we do not know this? And this particular Hermetic discourse, the one tonight, takes exactly the fulcrum upon which the whole dynamic process turns. It's the pivot. When Ezra Pound translated Confucius' Analects, he used the American poetic title, The Unwobbling Pivot. This is the unwobbling pivot of what we would call realization. It's the rebirth discourse. And in this discourse, two kinds of lists appear. One is a list of 12 vices, and the other is a list of 7 powers. In the late antique world, the late Roman Christian world, these were confused and transposed so that you came out with 7 vices and with 12 powers. And even today, when you have learned studies like this one, published by E.J. Brill, 1979, Corpus Hermeticum 13, The Rebirth Discourse, and Early Christian Literature, an excellent study. Got the man a PhD, published by one of the best publishing houses in the world. What he says is interesting enough and true enough as far as it goes. But a wisdom teacher sees differently, sees profundity instead of something that just makes sense. And the confusion exactly of the rebirth discourse is what led to the onslaught of what we call the Dark Ages, 1,000 years of ignorance in Western civilization. And the Hermetic learning took itself elsewhere and resurfaced many places, in Damascus, in Baghdad, in Central Asia, in a place identified theosophically as Shambhala, many places, before it came back to the West in Florence, Italy, and when it came back making the Renaissance. And went from Florence to places like London, where a Hermes like Shakespeare used a magic language that transcended the dialogue and made living wisdom things called plays. The play is the thing. This particular pivot, this discourse on rebirth, juxtaposes a 12-part pattern of deception and a 7-part pattern of consequence, and links them together in such a way that if you do not understand the dynamic interchange of the two, confusion results and you transpose instead of integrating together. And only through an integration is transcendence possible. through transposition, one ends up with a regression. And the regression spells the dependence on doctrine, on written rules, on dogmatic institutions, whether they're monks or priests or tyrannies of kings. And human beings become anesthetized pawns in power games by people consumed with anger and desire. And all of this has happened and will happen again. But this dialogue specifically shows us the launch window, the aperture by which we may exit this charade and never again be subject to the whimsical illusions of the ignorant. Now the 12-fold pattern that's enunciated here is always misidentified as the zodiac, the 12 constellations of the sun's path through the ecliptic, when actually the 12 are very close to what was called in India the Pratitya Samutpada, the 12-fold chain of dependent origination. Because 400 years after the founding of Alexandria, all of the world's wisdom had come together in that city. And the 12-point chain of dependent origination was as well known in wisdom circles there as they were in a place like Sarnath in India. The very first of the elements is ignorance. And the particular ignorance is the ignorance that there is even such a thing as a chain of causation that ensues from ignorance. And we'll get to it in due course. The second list, the seven, are seven powers, and the Greek term for them was the haimarmene. Seven power levels, which were exemplified cosmically by the five planets and the sun and the moon. And so these celestial powers, which were like powers of development, the moon being the first power, and then from there one went to higher and higher powers, leading finally to the last level, that after the seven planetary powers, one came to a dimension of power which had no movement whatsoever and was classically called the realm of the fixed stars. Not that the stars are fixed, and any careful observer at any time in the last 20,000, 30,000 years could determine that if you watch all night, you will see whole constellations of stars rise and set. And in certain seasons, like in winter time, when Orion begins to come at sunset above the horizon, you know that autumn is in progress, and when it rises high enough in the sky, you know that the winter solstice has occurred as it did last night. And you know when Sirius and its little triangle with Procyon and its other stars, when that reaches the horizon at dusk, then you understand that spring is coming. And Sirius was called Sothis by the Egyptians, and they knew that the Nile would flood within a couple of weeks because Sirius, Isis's star, was giving the call to this. The whole point being is that there were two different sets that were interrelated. There was a 12-fold set that had to do with our pattern of interior structure, and a 7-fold level of powers, like musical keys, that turned on this pattern of 12 in different ways. And the whole process was not to master cleverly all of the permutations of the 7 times 12, but to mature through transformations so that one could move from power level to power level and come out to the eighth level of unmoving eternalness. Then one was free of the complications, and instead of there being a pattern of 12 within, they all imploded to a single one. And the oneness which one was, and the eternal celestial spectrum of horizon which was there, added up to a ratio of one to eternity. And bringing those together in a ratio meant that one had achieved a godlike transcendence, and one had become, in the words of this Hermetic treatise, a son of God. Only someone who had already achieved that could teach this particular discourse as a living teaching, not as some scholar working in a university on a degree, a publication, as philosophy, however beautifully or well-meaning. That's a whole other order from a living wisdom. Let's come back to our discourse. In ancient times, to begin this discourse, Hermes Trismegistus would have used a phrase, a two-word phrase. This two-word phrase would have been called a logion, L-O-G-I-O-N, a logion, a saying, a wisdom saying. And that this wisdom saying was like a seed put not in the ear, but in the mind of the hearer. This particular two-word logion was given to Socrates by the Delphic oracle. It translates as know thyself. In Greek, it's nothi souton. Nothi souton. Know thyself. And with this particular seed, an inquiry is not satisfied with philosophically reaching by an applied methodology of dialogue some kind of consensus. It is only satisfied when it has opened up and grown into the flower which the seed has as its mature promise. The discourse begins with Tot saying, in your general teachings, Hermes, you spoke to me in riddles whenever you talked about God. He's saying, why, when you talked about God and my divine nature, why did you always speak in a language which was riddling? Now, we need to understand that a riddle is a form of language in which the language has been twisted so that instead of a line of meaning with a subject, a verb, an object, instead of a line of meaning, the twist has turned it so that there is a discontinuity exactly where the verb would function. And instead of the verb linking the subject and the object together in a line, the subject and object are left somewhat wobbly because one doesn't understand the verbal middle term. And in a riddle, or in the larger form of this language, which is a fairy tale, one has to understand that you need to gestalt the subject and object together in a larger context in order to determine what the missing middle is. In order to understand a riddle, you must not listen to the words of the riddle, but to imagine the meaning within which the riddle takes place. And this enlarged imagination, this creative imagination, as Ibn Arabi called it, this creative imagination is the realm of wisdom. It's the realm of mind. And only an alert, energized mind is able to intuit a context around words which are presented. If one is only hearing the words, then one is using the ear. If one is hearing words within a creative, imagined context, then one is using the mind. And so Tat is saying, Father, why have you spoken in riddles to me? And the obvious answer to this is that what he is being told here requires an active mind to hear the context in what is being said. What is the context? To know thyself. Hermes immediately says, no one is able to be saved before regeneration. That the whole purpose of what is being said is salvation, and that there is no salvation whatsoever without rebirth. So that the only way to hear the seed logian, know thyself, is in the context creatively imagined that it has, all this has something to do with our salvation, and that being only possible if we are reborn, born again. He elucidates the purpose of regeneration. The purpose of rebirth is to bring that vision of divine truth, which so many in the Hellenistic world sought, and that unregenerate man cannot achieve such a vision because his perception and his knowledge are limited to the physical world. As long as our perception and our conception are limited to the physical world, physical things, materiel, are the arbiter of how far meaning can extend. Physical things are the ultimate reference of words. And so words rely on things in the world like crutches in order to have meaning. And this cripples language. And it cripples the human being who uses language in this way. So a wisdom tradition takes away the crutches and says, there is no salvation as long as you are sick. And the sickness which you have is that you are leaning on things for meaning. Instead of creatively intuiting that meaning generates from the context of the mind, which is put around a living spiritual language, so that when someone speaks to you in a spiritual way, you hear with the mind and not just with the ears. And that the resonance of the mind hearing sends the meaning in a reverberation all the way through the levels of the body in terms of five dimensions, not just the dimensions of space, those three dimensions, and not just the fourth dimension of time, but the fifth dimension of consciousness. So that when the mind hears a wisdom language in the context of an energized mind, this five-dimensional continuum, space-time consciousness, reverberates through the body, and the body reconstitutes itself in this transformation and adjusts itself not to the material world, but to the immaterial realm of transcendence. And in this way, the body is saved through transformation. It is a gross misunderstanding to think that the body is left and thrown away like something worn out, and that the mind, in its merry way, transcends. And that transcendence is something mental. This is a product of philosophies. It's a product of centuries of arguments. It has nothing to do with what is real. The body itself is what has transformed. For the Hermetic Discourse on Rebirth specifically says that the energy continuum that comes out of the transformation is life and light. These words make life and light. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was light, and the light was the life of men. That's how the Gospel of John begins. And it's very much a Hermetic language, written about the same time as the first of the Hermetic treatises. Tot says, "You spoke in riddles to me concerning the divinity of man, and you said that this was the one part of the teaching which was to remain unknown to me until I was ready to alienate myself from the world. And this I have done. I have alienated the heart's thoughts from worldly deceptions." In other words, through all of the preceding 12 Hermetic discourses, I have gone through this cycle. And we have gone through a cycle of 12 Hermetic discourses. Tonight is the 13th. And it's the 13th that rises above the pattern of the previous 12. Rises above from the center, from the imploded meaning of all 12, coming to a common focus, and above that common focus on another level is the 13th. This treatise calls that transcendent 13th the Word. The Word. Someone who does this in actual fact is the Word, and invites the pattern of the 12 then to come through that core column of transcendence and join the 13th on a higher level, on a transcendent level. And that this process of going to higher powers can be done 7 times. From the first level and 7 times to an 8th level. And on the 8th level, the power is high enough, the efficacy is high enough, that the body has become eternal. The first Logion in the Gospel, according to Thomas, is, Jesus said, "He who understands the meaning of these Logions will not taste death." For the Gospel, according to Thomas, is very much a Hermetic treatise, a Hermetic document, which means that the Christianity of Jesus was Hermetic and not at all institutional, had nothing to do with committees. Hermes says to Tot, "You are thinking in an allegorical way. You're thinking in terms of an analogy when you puzzle over the term rebirth. You're thinking that rebirth must be something like birth. And you're wondering in yourself, what is the womb for rebirth?" He says, "Tot, the womb for rebirth is wisdom. The seed that goes into this womb is the Logion, the sacred word, the sacred language. And the generative power that comes out of this comes from the will of God." Now, we've talked about how will is a very peculiar kind of translation of what is meant here. It's not will like an egotistical willfulness, but it's the what we would call in mathematics, whenever there's a direction of energy, it's called a vector. And whenever you have two or more vectors within the same matrix, you develop what's called a tensor. The will of God would actually be a tensor of the transcendent dynamic. And that this is the begetter. And that there is a hierophant who choreographs this entire ensemble of events. And that ministrant or that hierophant is called the Son of God in this particular treatise. And you can see why someone would have a study Corpus Hermeticum 13, the rebirth and early Christian literature. And one would like to know, is this influenced by early Christian literature? And the conclusion is, but nowhere in our analysis did we find any evidence that would support such a claim. For this material is not a doctrine that's influenced by some philosophical viewpoint. We established almost 3 months ago in the first lectures here that this material, this wisdom, this understanding goes back in living tradition to the very origins of Egypt, before there were pyramids. Indeed, the pyramid age is an age of great power and degeneration. And that pyramids should be held up as some kind of sign of great psychic excellence is just an ignorance of the age. There's now a pyramid the same size as the one of Cheops in Las Vegas. And performs about the same function. But before the pyramids, where was the transcendent drama of achieving the afterlife? It was in a place called Abydos. And Abydos is still sacred, still there. And it is Abydos where the mysteries of Osiris were brought together in actual mystery play. And that's where the first dynasties of Egypt had their place of initiation, in Abydos. But even before Abydos, back into the times of Paleolithic art, some 25, 30,000 years ago, there was already the gestalt of that motion to make the star of realization expressively placed in the entire horizon of an artistic expression of personality. And in the first couple of lectures, we brought that out and showed. So that this is a wisdom tradition that is at least 30 to 40,000 years old in terms of the evidence of art by the time it's written down in 90 AD. That it's influenced by early Christian literature is extremely extraneous and beside the point. Rather, early Christian literature is a version of the Hermetic. Hermes says to Tat, when this transformation happens, you will talk as I am talking and know what you are saying. And I say to you now, I am not now the man I was. Who I was before was an identification based upon equivalences that used data which were assigned to me by values of this world, were roles foisted on me and given to me by others, on obeying conditions that were largely accidental or engendered through causal complications that I had nothing to do with. And this whole ensemble were the conditions upon which I made this identification. That's who I was before. But a transformation happened when I alienated myself away from that false illusion. That given mask, that role, which I was told, assumed to play, I alienated myself from that drama, and as I did, I pulled into an interior silence. And the more I pulled into an interior silence, the more I stopped listening to what they said I was and who I was, and the more I established an openness in my silence and came to realize that in actual fact, I was completely different from that. I am not now the man I was. Not that one has left one's humanity behind and become some kind of angelic adept. That's comic books. But that one is now a human being who has mastered a double energy mode, one of integration, of being able to pull meaning together closer until it resides in the very center of one's silent interior, and to allow the reverberation of that silence to fan out and become a differential opening, so that the voice out of the silence becomes one's own language. And that language is no longer dependent upon the world of things for meaning, but the meaning comes out of our reality. We speak from ourselves. Jung once described the power of an archetype. He said, when one is seized by an archetypal energy, the symbol controls us, and we have nothing to do about it. He talked about in an interview one time on film of a woman who fell desperately in love with a man because he could sing the right note. Oh, he's the one. He must have a beautiful soul. He can sing that note. And then Uncle Carl grimaced on his pipe, and he said, as usual, she regretted that one. As long as we are trapped in the one mode of constantly needing to integrate, we are susceptible to being dominated, in fact possessed, by transcendental energies, by psychic powers that are higher than this world. But with the transformation and our real self coming out of the silence and the differential energies of consciousness coming into play, we then transcend those levels of manipulation and are freed from ever being possessed again by anything, any compulsion, any demonic level, including hell, including expected heaven. And so this discourse was the discourse that brought the previous 12 together in a pattern and showed that all 12 pointed in their vectors of meaning to a common focus, and that that focus, instead of staying on that level, rose by itself. T.S. Eliot in the Four Quartets has a beautiful image of this experience of a silent core in deep meditation where his self, like some kind of mystical rose, seemed to rise in the vase in which it had been placed and rose completely out of the realm. It's somewhat similar to that. I used to talk 25 years ago about the difference between taking a line and tying a knot and taking a line and tying a bow. And with the bow, if you pull on the line, it pulls open. Whereas with the knot, it just pulls tension on the line. The ego is like a knot in the line. It likes tension, and that's why it always sabotages freedom and openness to keep tension, because its reality is determined on the basis of setting these kinds of tensions in process. whereas the open self doesn't knot up at all. And in fact, it's the kind of bow that when you pull it, the string disappears. It's that kind of process. And it's this particular hermetic discourse in the ancient wisdom tradition where for the first time it's written down. It was known for tens of thousands of years. It was never written down before this. And it says, we see in this silence that by God's mercy there has come to be in us a form which is not fashioned out of matter, and that we have then, and the phrase is like the ancient Egyptian Book of the Dead, whose true name was The Coming of Forth by Day. It was never called the Book of the Dead. It was called the Book of Coming Forth by Day. When the sun rises, our immortal soul rises out of the realm of the netherworld with it. The phrase is, we have passed forth out of ourselves and entered an immortal body. Not a mind that has nothing more to do with filthy body. Has passed forth out of myself and into an immortal body. So that consciousness, real consciousness, not the psychic equivalent which the ego imagines and manufactures out of clever juxtapositions of things in this world, and the ego is very good at making bogus imitations of consciousness. Oh, it has a wonderful time in saying it is really conscious because it can do all this stuff. God, I have a stock portfolio that doesn't end. I'm really savvy about business. I'm highly conscious. It's irrelevant. It has nothing to do. It's extraneous. Consciousness, hermetically speaking, is a quintessence. It's not a fifth element, it's a fifth dimension. And just like the three dimensions of space radically alter when you add the fourth dimension of time, when you add the fifth dimension of consciousness, time-space radically alters. It ceases to be a limiting condition for materiality. Material things need a four-dimensional continuum in order to be. This table cannot maintain itself as a table without time and space being coordinated, four dimensions. But you add a fifth dimension, and you dissolve this four-dimensional reality in that five-dimensional transformational cauldron, you come out with something completely different. Completely different. Consciousness is the quintessence. This dialogue, this discourse, this wisdom teaching says specifically, things are no longer things of space dimension. That what occurs now is alien to that previous condition. We would say, using late 20th century language, that the radically transformed is so different from our everydayness that it would seem to us as if it were surreal. The real self to the man on the street is something surreal. It's like from another planet. It has to be from another planet, another star system, another time continuum. It has to be, couldn't possibly be us. It has to be something other. It has to be aliens. Whereas the Hermetic process 2,000 years ago didn't allow that regressive crisscross to happen. And that regressive crisscross in our time just shows the massive nightmare ignorance that covers the world like a mud. What is alienated through progressive interiorization to the point of no longer depending for reference of real upon things, that the referencing comes to rest exactly in one's own silence. And instead of that silence being a static, motionless, non-moving, it turns out to be super dynamic and engenders a reverberation. And when the silence reverberates like a bell struck, the tone are the energy of consciousness. I think we have to change our tape. Let's take a minute and change our tape. We'll continue. Just a minute here.